Hi, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Megan.
We're two moms with 8 kids between us, from little to grown.
We're in different areas of the country and in different stages of life.
But we both know that motherhood's a lot easier when real moms share tips and encouragement.
And remind you that it's really all going to be okay.
We're not experts. We're parents who've been there.
We're not perfect. We're real. Welcome to the Mom Hour.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 318 of the Mom Hour. I'm Megan Francis here with Sarah Powers. Hey, Sarah.
Hey, Megan. I'm excited to be doing listener questions again.
I know. It's like one of our favorite things. And if you listened last week, we also did listener questions. We tend to do these. Well, we always do these two in a row.
Unless we're doing like a special one-off, like a themed one. But yeah, almost always in pairs, about every 3 months.
Yeah. And so we'll solicit questions from the community. And some of these are questions we just got, and some are questions we've been sitting on for a while. We try to mix it up so that we have a good, you know, a good blend of different kinds of questions in each episode. But we really love these because it allows us to dive deep on more specific parenting concerns than we usually do. Usually we try to like hit everybody's. We try to be everything for everybody. And sometimes it's nice just to be able to answer people's specific questions. So a big caveat that we aren't always, this is just us, right? This is just our opinions. And we're not maybe always going to address your specific situation to your ultimate liking. It's how we do things, and that's okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is a good reminder. We bring our own personal experiences, and I think that's an asset, but also sometimes misleads people to think like we think that's the only way to do things. So we have to try to be really clear about that. Like, we're bringing to you our experience and the things, you know, the people we've known and our more globalized experience. And we know that that's inherently limited. So we can give you a lot of what we have drawn personally as moms, and we can give you none of what it's like to be, you know, an expat living in Southeast Asia with 6 children and like a sick mother-in-law. Like, there, sometimes the questions we get are so specific, we just have to remind everybody, like, we don't know. We don't know it all.
Right. We don't. We do not know it all. Well, with that said, let's take a break. And then when we come back, we'll show you just how much we don't know it all.
Just how much we do not know, and a little bit of what we do. We'll be right back.
I love it. Sarah, I have to tell you, I am practically living in my washable silk pajamas from our sponsor, Quince. They are so soft and breezy and really cool and comfortable for warm nights, but they also look sleek and sophisticated and are great for puttering around the house on a weekend morning.
Well, Megan, you know I am all about soft and comfy things, and I've been eyeballing those silk pajamas too, but maybe I'll go for a pair of cashmere sweats instead. I may not be able to choose just one thing because Quince really has the market cornered on high-quality, affordable luxury. What's really great about Quince is that they do all that sourcing work for you, so you know you're getting the best quality products made sustainably using fair trade practices. And Quince removes the middleman, so you're also getting these super luxurious goods at a great price. Their totally transparent prices are often 50 to 80% less than what you'd see for similar products elsewhere.
Yeah, so Quince focuses on essential products like organic linen clothes, Turkish cotton towels, and Italian leather bags. But since everything is shipped directly from the factory, they can keep those costs way down and then pass the savings to us. Quince finds the best factories who produce these goods for well-known luxury brands, and they partner only with the ones who are committed to the highest production standards, fair wages, safety, and sustainability, and then they ship directly to you from around the world. No agents, no warehouse, no stores. So say you order Turkish towels, they're going to go straight from Turkey to you, and there's no extra cost for more companies getting involved. Quality shouldn't be a luxury. You deserve it. Try Quince today.
To get free shipping and 365-day free returns, just go to onequince.com/themomhour. I've seen a lot of their collections sell out immediately, so you'll want to move quick. Go to onequince.com/themomhour. That's onequince.com/themomhour. onequince.com/themomhour. We are welcoming back our sponsor, Little Potato Company, to the show today. And Megan, I am obsessed. So you already knew all about this brand when we started working with them, but they were new to me. I cannot get over these microwave ready kits as a quick dinner side. You can get them at the grocery store and keep them in the fridge. And they're just little potatoes that cook up whole really fast. And then a packet of seasoning that I toss in with some butter and serve.
Oh my gosh, yes. The concept here is so simple. Little Potato Company potatoes are small and evenly sized, so they cook quickly and consistently. And those microwave kits eliminate any additional washing and prepping, which is great for summertime dinners, where we might not even come in from the pool until like 7 o'clock. The seasoning packets come in flavors like garlic, parsley, and lemon and garlic herb, and they are so delicious.
Well, now that I'm a total convert, I'm thinking of all the great ways our family can use Little Potatoes this summer. Foil packs on the grill, quick potato salads to bring to a backyard gathering, sheet pan dinners. I notice also there's a ton of great recipe ideas at littlepotatoes.com.
Yes, and I just learned that Little Potato Company is female-owned, something we always love to share and support. You can find Little Potatoes in the produce section at stores like Walmart, Costco, Sam's, and a lot of supermarkets. And if you aren't sure if your local grocery store carries them, visit littlepotatoes.com and click Where to Buy at the top of the page to find a store near you. Again, just look for that Where to Buy button at littlepotatoes.com to find a store near you.
Okay, we are back with a question, a voicemail question from Jillian. So let's hear from Jillian now.
Hi, Megan and Sarah. This is Jill. I'm a mom of two little girls, ages 5 and 7, and we live in Massachusetts. My question was inspired by a post I once saw from a friend online asking how they should address another parent that they didn't know about how they're buckling a toddler incorrectly into a car seat at parent pickup. I would love to hear your opinions if you think it's ever appropriate or acceptable to give unsolicited tips or advice to other parents you see out in the real world, specifically about things that you perceive that may put their kids in danger. What's the best way to go about doing this? Have you ever been on the receiving end of unsolicited advice from a stranger or an acquaintance? Have you ever seen this done well? I'd love to hear you two discuss this. I love the show. Bye.
So Jillian, I have to say that I love how diplomatically you set this up because I truly have no idea whether you were on the side of advice giving or advice taking. Part of me thinks maybe you were the advised at, but I don't know why. That's just totally like my gut reaction and I could be wrong about that. So I like that this is truly a question where I feel like we're answering it without the context of having to like make you feel better or, you know, like, I don't know. You know what I mean? About whatever side you're on. And I kind of appreciate that because it makes the question a little more, it just makes it a little more neutral, like for us to actually have our true answers. So I will just say, I know, Sarah, you've got some very specific memories around this and specific like stories of this, of you being on one or the other side of that. But I think I am hardwired to be defensive if anybody points out that I'm like, if anything about my parenting, even a small thing, even if it's something I couldn't have known or wouldn't have been expected to know, I can feel very bad about not having known something or even maybe having known it and not done it perfectly. And my initial reaction is to be very defensive. That said, there have been times in my life where the right person said the right thing in the right way at the right time. And it was very impactful. And I don't think I'm alone in being defensive about having my parenting called out. And I definitely don't think anybody wants to hear this from a stranger. And I think it could even potentially have the impact of like just having a negative impact in another way. But all that said, there is a time and a place, I think, that where it's appropriate. I just think it has to be handled very carefully. And Sarah, I know you've got more specifics about this.
Well, it brought up a couple stories that I remember. But before the stories, I'll just say this is like one of those XY axis graphs where like the more severe the danger the child is in, the more likely I would be to say something or appreciate that someone else said something. So for example, let's say you have a crawling baby that you don't know very well, like an acquaintance's baby, and they're crawling around and they put a marble in their mouth. I'm going to jump in right away and be like, oh my gosh, your baby has a marble in their mouth. And hopefully I'd be like, oh, I just saw this. I hope you don't mind. I'm going to like, I might even reach in that baby's mouth. Maybe
Just going to say, I think in that case, I would just spring into action. And it doesn't always come off as judgy though, right? Because you're not telling the mom, gosh, didn't you see they put a marble in their mouth? It's like, whoops. You know, it's that, oh. Yeah,
right.
baby's got a marble in their mouth there. And then you just take care of it. And that builds that like we're all in it together camaraderie, which is very different from pointing something out.
Right. And like in that case, danger is probably imminent. I'm thinking about swimming pool, like there's some things around water or like electrical outlets or some things where it's not a judgment, but you do have to say something and it might feel awkward. And you might go into overdrive so much that you actually do overstep a little bit. And the person's like, oh, he totally knows not to touch an outlet. Thanks. I'm on it. And then you feel kind of bad and it could get awkward. But I guess my point is, when the severity is a little less, like, for example, the 5-point buckle harness example, if that chest clip isn't at their armpit level, is a couple inches south of the armpit, and I don't know the person very well, I'm not sure I do say something. Like, so there's, I guess my point is, this is a very case by case scenario situation, but I'm going to tell two stories, one where I was the one told and one where I did the telling. And Megan, I totally agree with you. The knee-jerk reaction for me is to feel very embarrassed, maybe right. A little less defensive, but really embarrassed, like I should have known. And then later on reflection, I have felt really thankful, actually. So when I've been the one being told. So the one where I was told, it was my first baby with a car seat where you carry the bucket seat by the handle, you kind of link your arm up under it. And I was told by a mom friend, and by the way, I don't think this is even true anymore, but I think it was true at the time, that you were not supposed to drive with the handle up. It was not recommended. You're supposed to click it into its back position. Now, yes. Again, you all listening, this is 13 years ago. So forget about the fact that this may have changed. But at the time, that I believe that was the best recommendation, and I didn't know. So I had the little hangy toys for her to look at in the car. And I had a very dear friend who was only a year ahead of me in motherhood be like, oh, I noticed you kept that up when you put it in the car. My pediatrician told me that it's probably better to leave that back. Or I learned at the fireman's car seat seminar to keep that back. And I was like, oh my gosh, I had no idea. I'd probably been doing it for 3 or 4 months, you know, at that point. And it was a little thing. And she said it really delicately. And she framed it as like, I didn't know this either, but I just learned right. that. And that, I think, right. is a really friendly way to frame it. And if you go back to the severity, that was not really like a imminent danger thing. So she didn't have to say something. I was actually really glad that she did. So that's an example where, I was glad she did. I felt a little silly and I'm glad that she said something. Another time I was at a friend's house who had a new baby or a crawling baby or a baby and a toddler. And she had these tiny magnets on her fridge. They're the kinds that that are really strong, but they're yes. really tiny, like the size, like a little cube. You know what I mean? Not even yep. chokeable size, swallowable size, like right. really tiny metal magnets
like that make your intestines stick together size.
Yes. And yes. so I want to say that her kids were not super independent yet. Like maybe they were the type that were still mostly in the bouncy seat or they weren't super mobile. And I was just like, and the magnets were kind of up high. So like that day, it wasn't imminent, but I wasn't sure that she knew that she was about to enter a phase of life where that was not safe. And I said something. I was like, hey, just so you know, like these magnets like are that's bad news if it ever gets into a kid's mouth. And I don't know if you knew that. And this was a really good friend of mine. And she was like, oh, I hadn't even thought about that. You know, so just like it wasn't on her radar because if I remember correctly, she was still pretty in infant territory where it wasn't like her toddler was walking over, grabbing the magnet. And I was like, no, 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 no. She was like a few months away from that, but I could see it playing out and I wasn't sure that she knew. And I said something and it went over fine, but she was a very, very good friend that I felt I could say something. If I was at a brand new friend's house and they had those magnets on their fridge, I don't think I say something. So I guess my point is it's so personal and I don't know, but I do think sometimes you say something and sometimes you're the receiver and it can feel awkward and yeah. we're just all doing our best as humans.
Well, as you were telling those two stories, I was just thinking, Sarah, I bet you have way more stories than those two that came to mind that of like a friend, like a true friend, just giving you like a little FYI mm-hmm. and it doesn't even stick in your memory because it was such a not big deal because we yeah. can't all know everything. Like we all are going right. into this with the understanding that we're not all literally reading every single parenting story there is out there. And for a while it was kind of funny because I was doing so much writing about parenting, like so much that I was scouring. This is back in the days I was pitching stories. So I was scouring press releases. I was scouring mm-hmm. studies. I knew so much more than the typical mom did because it was my job to know, like literally my profession was to know these things and then to try to pitch stories based on that information. So I remember it being kind of a joke around my mom friends that I was just like a walking encyclopedia about everything, like whether, and not even just safety issues, but like, was their latch good? I could spot a bad latch from across the room, like all of these things. So I was kind of just like this walking encyclopedia, but it was always just, it was just that I had a knowledge base that I knew not everybody else had the time or interest to have. Mm-hmm. And so it would just kind of come out naturally in conversation. I wasn't walking around telling people this stuff in just, I wasn't like at the Target bathroom and saw another mom and it's like, hey, by the way, did you know? Because they didn't know me. There wasn't the context. There wasn't the care. All of that was missing. And most of the time, like you said, the danger was not imminent. And if the danger was imminent, like that imminent, I'd be springing into action. Like if I saw, and I have seen this before, driving down the highway and there's a baby crawling around the back of a car. I have like essentially pulled people over before, like been like pointing at their back seat, like get over, or I've called the cops, like, because that is a true safety hazard. Like there is a child crawling around the back of a car and no place. This isn't like, it's not just that they didn't know where the clip went, or maybe they didn't know where the clip went and the kid freed themselves. Whatever. That's not between me and them. That's between them and like just correct the situation, get it under control. And I've sometimes felt a little weird about acting in that way, but it's almost like the part of your brain that's going danger, danger, danger takes over and you make a split second decision based on that. So even if it's a little awkward when you hand the baby back to the mom, you know, who the baby somehow got out of the mom's grasp and was about to fall in the pool and you grab that baby, or it's kind of like another pool analogy would be me sitting and watching like little kids running past me that aren't mine and me telling them walking feet because I can't help myself. I just can't, you know, I can't help it. And there might be a little awkwardness, but that's okay. That's different, I feel, than me saying, hey, did you know that, I don't know, the way you have them buckled into their stroller is not the best. Or like, we could take this down so many roads, some of which are safety in the short term, some of which are like longer term things that wouldn't maybe even become apparent for a while. And I think with total strangers or even acquaintances, I just tread very lightly.
Yeah, I tread lightly too. And if I ever felt it was important enough, urgent, important, imminent, or high stakes enough, I think framing it in that, hey, I know not everybody knows this because I just found out, but I recently learned that is a way to soften it so that you're not like, hey, you're the last one to know how to buckle a kid into a car seat. Yeah. But like, hey, this is a really common misconception, but you will not do this perfectly and you will have it done imperfectly
to you,
the course of your parenting. And so this is where like heaps and heaps of empathy and grace on both sides go a long way. And I think it's okay to feel the defensiveness, feel the embarrassment, and let yourself feel that. And I distinctly remember feeling it and then almost shifting to like, I'm glad I know that now. I'm going to let that go. I felt my feelings and now I'm just going to be glad that I have that piece of information, however indelicately it was delivered. So,
yeah, I think that's a really good caveat and a way to look to kind of approach it. And I will also just say that this is not like, this doesn't go away as your kids get older. If anything now, it's kind of like, because they're not doing things that, it's not me doing things to them that might put them in danger. It would be more like them doing things themselves that would put them in danger. And so in some ways that takes a little bit of the loadedness out of it, but in some ways it also is almost even more loaded because what they're doing feels like a reflection of your parenting. So
Or it implies that you've like, you're not paying attention or you're not like raising your kids a certain way.
Exactly. Yeah. I still have conversations with my very, very good friends where we'll be pretty frank with each other about not like we think your kid is in trouble, but just like, oh, wow, that sounds really hard. What are you going to do about that? Or what do you think is going to help him or her? And sometimes that's how the conversation goes. And then sometimes it's like, you know, well-meaning, but kind of busybody people trying to make comments about what they saw your kid doing this, that place. And And you have to decide what's just going to roll off your back and what you're going to dig in on and what you're going to pretend to let roll off your back, but then go home and mull over. And actually, you know, sometimes someone says something to me and I blow it off and because I don't think they have the relationship to make the comment. And then later I think about it and I'm like, well, maybe they were right. So it's so imperfect. Like we're all, it doesn't end. It just changes shape.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on to a question we got from Stephanie by email. And I think you're going to have some wise words for this one. That's my prediction, Megan. So Stephanie says, I would love to hear how you handle things when you have a kid who is struggling. It could be with friends or school or sibling dynamics, and how you deal with your other kids, the one not struggling, when one of them is struggling. So I have two kids, 12 and 8. And for various reasons, at one time or another, one may be struggling with something and taking all of my energy. I would love to hear how you handle different typical struggles and then how you give enough attention to the kid who is just bopping along, which I love that last phrase because that is, they don't all need you in the same way in equal increments at the same time. And you have five kids, Megan, and I have three. And when I had three, I remember my mom saying, well, somebody's always going through something. With two, you might get a break. But with three, you will literally be in a phase where someone is going through something all the time.
Yeah. So I want to make two comments to set the my answer up. One is that just as a caveat, some kids look really good at bopping along or appear to be always bopping along and aren't necessarily bopping along. So I think that that's just a good thing to keep in mind as you're dealing with multiple kids. Like some kids are always just going to fly under the radar more, and some are just going to command your attention more. And that doesn't always mean that the one commanding your attention is actually needier at that moment than the other one. It's just, they have different ways of expressing it or maybe different ideas about what they want from you. So that's just a caveat, just to keep in mind that you might have kids who never seem like they have any problems and they're deeply troubled. No, but they have stuff going on too. They might just not be the squeaky wheel. So that's just a caveat. I think that to answer that question, it depends. My answer would depend on the depth and the length of the need from the kid who's having the struggle. And by that, I mean, is this a kid who came home bummed today because someone was mean to them in seventh grade or whatever, and they're having a hard time, and so you're going to give them a little extra attention tonight, but by tomorrow it's going to be okay, you know, more or less okay? Or is this like an ongoing thing, like they're dealing with depression or they're dealing with school is really hard for them or something like that? And I would answer differently, because I think the bopper alonger can probably go longer than you think without like, they can probably have some benign neglect for longer than you think. Like, it's probably going to be just fine if they get sort of what's left over of your attention for a few days. If it drags out into 2 or 3 months, because this is a more ongoing, long-term issue, then I think that's when you have to do some proactive thinking about how they can get their needs met, maybe without you being the one meeting the need. And I think, you know, Sarah, you and I have had some really good conversations in the past about how not everything has to come from you. Like, not every need has to be met by you. And sometimes that means getting a relative or a close friend to pay them attention in a different way, or to make sure they're involved in activities or with other people, even like a really good friend's house where, like, if your family is really struggling and those struggles really center around one of your kids and not the other or others, you might be able to lean on families you really trust to kind of pick up that slack. And that's totally okay. Like, I have memories, definitely have memories of being like an older elementary school kid and like a middle school aged kid where my best friend's houses became like second homes to me. And that was great. And I think that was like a really special thing and very valuable to me in a lot of ways. So if you, for whatever reason, whether it's because one of your kids is struggling or because if you're struggling, I think it's really okay to strategically look at how to get those needs met by other people. And that should not be something you feel bad about at all. Like, you're getting their needs met. But it just depends. Like, if we're talking 2-3 days, I think probably the bopper alonger is not even really going to notice. Maybe they're going to be a little put out because they didn't get to do some special thing with you, or you were a little distracted when they asked you a question or something. But overall, I think they're going to be okay. I don't think you really have to plan for it. You deal with you triage, right? You deal with the greatest need first. But if that greatest need drags out and you need a backup plan for the other child or children, I think there's a lot of ways you can go about that that don't have to take away from the kid who really needs you, mom, right now.
Yes. I love all of that. And I especially loved your caveat, because I am and was a least squeaky wheel. And so I appreciate not overlooking the wheels that don't squeak, as your caveat. So I loved that. And it brought up a couple things. One is, I think moms in the 21st century, and especially in our community of, like, we're all trying real hard to do this really well, right?
Right.
Just a reminder that what feels like an unequal distribution of your parenting energy in your head may not be playing, it may or may not be playing out when you actually look at the time and resources each, the bopper and the struggling kid are getting. And what I mean by that is, we tend to live a lot, especially the Sarahs among us, live a lot in the ruminating, the thinking, the planning, maybe the reading articles, the asking questions of your spouse or your friends. So your mental energy may feel like 90-10. In other words, like, the kid who's struggling, I'm thinking about it all day. I'm worrying about it at night. I'm up thinking about it. Like, I'm talking to my friends about it. And it may feel like 95-5 in terms of how much you are also spending mental energy thinking about the well-being of the bopper. However, I would encourage you to look at the actual time and connection time spent with in this case, it's two kids. So it's like an easy, like, are you still driving that kid's carpool and having little moments of connection in the car? Are you tucking them in sometimes at night? Are you able to respond to their needs most of the time? And Megan, you said, like, you might be a little more distracted and they're going to be okay, of course. But I think separating those two things may give you a reality check on how much is the struggling kid truly not getting your time and energy, or is most of it literally in your head? And I don't mean you're making it up. I mean, you're spending the wheel turning mental load is 95-5, but the actual is like 60-40. And then I would say it's all going to be fine, because that bop along kid will give you a run for your money at some point, and the mental load will even out in the wash eventually. But I can think of some scenarios where the actual output of your energy might feel imbalanced. It might be a kid with special needs who has a lot of appointments or therapies that you're driving to. It might be you have a new baby, and so you're actually not able to do bedtimes and nap times and preschool pickups with the older ones. So now you're in a situation where you truly are spending a lot more time and outward facing energy toward the struggling kid. And I do think that's sometimes the case. And then I think, Megan, you're so right, that the duration and the severity of the situation would sort of lead you to, is this going to blow over in, I would say even a week or two? Like, this kid is really having a hard time adjusting to school, or like just got a big like school play coming up and they're super stressed and they're all over the map, but we know there's an end in sight, versus a longer term thing where you are going to want to employ the village, or like figure out how you can redistribute. What you cannot do is have more energy than you have. It's a finite, like your love is not finite, but your time is finite and your resources are finite. And so I think if you're even wondering about this, you're probably doing a great job, which is often what we say. Like, if you're even aware that there's a bopper and a struggler, you're probably already being really intentional about it and doing a great job, I think, is where I'll finish that one.
Yeah, I love that. And I would also, just to add to your 60-40, because I think that, you know, you think it's 80-20 and it's actually 60-40, or you think it's 99-1 and it's actually 70-30. Like, sometimes our perception is off because of how much mental energy we're putting into it. But sometimes in those moments too, a little goes a long way. So like a 5-minute conversation with the kid who otherwise is kind of just in it on their own, or a longer hug, or just verbalizing to them that you've been a little distracted, and that, like, just being honest. I think sometimes like we're afraid to be honest with our kids because we think that shows, I don't know, weakness, or like we need to be on top of it and we want them to think we have it all together. But I think sometimes I've just told my kids, I'm really grumpy right now, or I'm really distracted, there's a lot going on, or I'm really busy, or I'm, you know, not to put it on them, it's not their problem, But just so like, you're not imagining things. Things are a little off. And I think that that's a way of like reverse crazy making because, you know, kids want to know that their perception of what's going on around them is real and accurate. And just validating that can go a long way. Just know, like letting them know you're still thinking about them and that it'll get better, I think can go a long way too. So in addition to bringing in outside friends and just to put a cap on that too, I think that sometimes unless something outwardly drastic has happened in your family, like a death or like something really, really a bad illness or something, it can be really hard to reach out to people and say, I'm struggling. I need a little more support, but people will absolutely step up for you because everybody struggles. And we're going to get into a little more of a question along this line in the second half of this episode, but well, maybe I'll just leave it for that. But I think that like just letting people help you is a gift to them.
Yes.
And absolutely. One that they're probably very happy to help you with. So,
yes, absolutely. All right. Well, let's take that break. And we do have kind of a corollary question about mom when mom is struggling when we come back. So we'll be right back.
Sarah, I have some really exciting news to share with you. So you might want to sit down for this one. No, actually, wait, put on your dancing shoes and stand up. Are you ready?
I mean, I guess so.
Okay, here it is. Our favorite wine company, Bev, has a new varietal, and it's a sparkling rosé.
Okay. Well, Megan, I know you're a big fan of bubbly and a big fan of rosé, and we are both big fans of Bev, so having all three of those things in one place is very exciting.
It's really a cause for celebration over here, Sarah. The new varietal is called Glam, and she's extra dry, extra fizzy, and extra refreshing. Like all of Bev's wines, Glam contains zero sugar and has just 3 grams of net carbs and 100 calories per serving. The little cans are adorable and each contains a serving and a half, perfect for poolside hangouts and backyard barbecues. And in honor of Pride Month, Bev is donating all Glam sales through June up to $10,000 to support the organization Way Out and their youth center initiatives. You can find out more about that partnership on Bev's website.
Megan, you know I'm a huge fan of Bev's original rosé and I can't wait to try Glam. Though really all their varietals are so good. There's also a Sauve Blanc, a Pinot Grigio, a Pinot Noir, and a Sparkling White. So if you can't decide which one you want to try, go for the variety pack. And we've got an exclusive deal just for our listeners where you're going to receive 20% off your first purchase. Plus, you'll get free shipping on all orders. Go to drinkbev.com/momhour or use the code momhour at checkout to claim that deal. That's drinkbev.com/momhour.
We are welcoming back Go Kid Go as a sponsor today. Go Kid Go is the podcast production company behind Bobby Wonder, a narrative podcast for kids ages 6 to 11 that's one of the fastest growing family-friendly podcasts out there.
Yes. So as a podcaster, of course, I want my kids to get into podcasts too, but it's not always easy to find really entertaining kids shows. Bobby Wonder has all the great voice acting, music, and sound effects that really grab kids' attention when they're watching TV, only this is audio, which in our house does not count as screen time. Bobby Wonder is about the adventures of a 10-year-old alien, his sidekick, and of course, the villain who's out to get him.
Episodes of Bobby Wonder are each about 15 to 20 minutes long, which is such a good length for a car ride. Or hey, if you have a big long road trip this summer, your kids can binge all the available episodes in one sitting. New episodes come out every Monday, so they'll have something to look forward to for the drive back, too.
Visit GoKidGo.com for more information and subscribe to Bobby Wonder wherever you get your podcasts. That's Bobby Wonder from GoKidGo.com.
Okay, Sarah. So in the last half, we heard from a mom who was asking about when a kid is struggling, but it really led to like perfectly segue into this question, which is about when mom is struggling. Because really, anytime anyone in the family unit is struggling, everyone feels it. And whether it's because mom is working double time to try to help a kid who's struggling, or mom is just less available because she's struggling, like it still shifts the family dynamics in very unique ways. So I'll read this question from Shannon. She has a 5, a 3, and a 1-year-old. So in the trenches for sure. Yeah. And Shannon says, I am struggling big time with anxiety these days. Lots of different things have contributed to it, not COVID related, as many might think. But I think a lot of people are probably there, right? With COVID. Yep. And it seems my emotions are at an all-time high. It feels difficult to connect to everyday life sometimes and to thrive as a mom during these hard times. And then she just says she would love to hear personal stories and how we kept the bus moving and how we were able, when we were struggling, in times that we were struggling, to connect with our kids when we just didn't seem to have anything left in us. And Shannon, I'll just say that I think, first of all, literally every mom I've ever known has gone through this. Some talk about it openly and outwardly, and some don't. But everybody I know has had a moment where they're struggling, or sometimes months where they're struggling, or longer. I think, again, Sarah, I can't remember if this it was this episode or maybe the last listener questions episode, but you talked about the 20th century mom or 21st century mom.
I think that was just earlier in this same episode. It's all running together, I think.
And how very unfair our expectations of ourselves are. Yes. Like, it's not enough that we just show up and get the job done. We have to love it all the time and, like, be connected all the time and be present all the time and be making magic and memories and amazing moments all the time. And I just don't think it's a fair expectation to have of ourselves. Like, sometimes I am phoning it in. And I have, you know, now that my kids are older, sometimes I'm honest with them that I'm kind of phoning it in. Like, you know what, guys, I just don't feel like making dinner tonight. Like, what's the best, what's the easiest way we can get dinner on the table and try to make it kind of fun for them? Like, what's the easiest way I can please you all by getting you fast food or whatever, right? But, and I know that's not what you're asking. You're not asking it necessarily about the details, the functional details of motherhood, but more like the moments of connection and presence and just being in it. But I would argue that they all, one leads to another. Like, my ability to manage the details of a household directly impact how I feel about the people in my household and how I feel about my role in the household. And so sometimes giving myself a break from one helps me do the other. Like, if I just can't be the mom who's super hands-on right now and I give myself that permission to not be, it sometimes allows me to just take care of a few dumb things that got to get done around the house. And then I find that, wow, now I have more energy to go back to the to being silly or to being a good listener or to connecting with my kids. Like, those things are separate, but one feeds the other. So I don't know, Sarah, what do you think?
Well, I'm going to start with two things I feel like I always say when we get questions about struggling. The first one is my blanket advice is to lower your expectations of yourself. And when you think you have already done that, do it again.
Lower them again. Yes.
And I, this is advice I would give myself, that we tell ourselves we're already phoning it in. We're already doing the bare minimum. We're already falling down on the job. And if you write it down, write down what you really expect of yourself or the things that are on your plate. And if you think like a therapist or think like a good friend and you look at that objectively and you're like, oh, Shannon, honey, like, you could still take more off your plate. You could still lower your expectations for what it means to get through the day as a present mom. So lower your expectations, think, sit with that for a hot second, and then lower them again is my blanket advice. And then my other blanket advice is just remember that getting some mental health support can be very temporary, very affordable, depending on how you do it. So if that's been a block for you, or you're like afraid to say out loud that seeing someone for a few weeks might actually be the best thing, I never want it to go unsaid that we have so many moms say the best thing they've ever done is just see an online virtual counselor for a few weeks and just have some space to talk stuff through. Now, you may say back to me, Shannon, nope, Sarah, I already have low expectations and I'm already in therapy, or I'm not interested in therapy. And then I think there are some other things I can offer, but I always want to say those two things. I want to focus on this idea of being present or connected to our kids, because I think, first of all, that's a wonderful goal. And I think it's also something that is a relatively recent to-do that we've been told to add to our to-do list, that I'm not sure that moms of the 70s, 80s, or 90s had on their to-do list, was to be present and connect with their children. I'm not saying they weren't doing it, but they didn't have a name for it in the way that we do.
It would be like a byproduct, right? It wasn't the goal. It was the byproduct of the stuff you did, like the practical momming.
Right.
And I think that's what I was trying to get at. Like, the practical momming leads to the things that lead to the connection. And they can, so they're like separate, but together, and like separating them out and trying to just have the connection without being able to do the practical momming, to me, it feels like putting a lot on your plate. So sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, that's like, okay.
Yeah.
And the other thing that leads to feeling present and connected is taking care of your own needs. Yes. Unfortunately, I know that's not helpful to hear because we want to just take care of our kids and make sure we don't mess up our kids in the future because they had an absent mother. But unfortunately, it's really hard to be present and connected if you are feeling burnt out, overwhelmed, or having like a mental health crisis yourself. So while you work on yourself, one tactical tip, I guess I would say, is to set really achievable goals or daily intentions with regard to that kid connection, because it's easy to blanket blame yourself and saying, oh my gosh, I have been so checked out on my phone. I've been so consumed with this, you know, health crisis that's happening. Like, you know, the kids don't even understand it. And it's all I'm thinking about, that you can easily convince yourself that you haven't had a moment of connection with your little children in weeks. And you, if you buy that story, it's a very shameful story. But I wonder if you like wrote in your journal or just had a little mental intention once a day, all I'm going to do today is spend 5 minutes with one of my kids, not even all of my kids, 5 minutes of whatever feels joyful and connected, pushing them on the swing, reading a book, giggling, having a pillow fight, 5 minutes with one kid. So not because that kid needs it. Actually, the kid's probably fine, as I always say, but because you might find a little bit of momentum from checking that off at the end of the day or following through on that little, very achievable commitment you set for yourself. And maybe if things like phone addiction and social media scrolling feel unhealthy to you, maybe it's a goal in the opposite direction. Like, I'm going to shut my phone off just a half an hour before bed. Like, so achievable that it's laughably doable. I'm not talking about big goals, because I think sometimes we're so hard on ourselves, we forget the things we're already doing at a pretty high level. So that would be, if you feel like you're a goal or a task motivated person like I am, I think sometimes setting those very, very achievable goals or intentions can actually create a more realistic picture of what's going on in your day if you're feeling extra hard on yourself. So that's one thing I'd offer.
Can I also point out, Sarah, that while you, because I think that's really brilliant, it's almost the same as when you tell yourself, I'm so tired. I hate, my house is such a mess. I'm so tired. I want to go to bed. But before I go to bed, I'm just going to quickly clean off this bathroom counter, or like, mm-hmm. you know, it's like you just check the thing off the list and you might go to bed feeling exactly the same. But when you wake up in the morning, you might feel better, you know, mm-hmm. just knowing it was done. And I think what's the trap you don't want to fall into is expecting yourself to feel a certain way. Like, you can't make yourself feel connected to people. Like, that's not,
yes.
you can't force yourself to feel anything. If you're not feeling super into momming, and by momming, I mean the relationship of motherhood, there's nothing really you can do to like make yourself feel that. You can fake it. You can go through some motions because they have to get done and because your kid probably won't know the difference, right? But like, that doesn't mean the whole time you're not going to necessarily walk away from that 5 minute tickle fight or the snuggle on the sofa or whatever it is thinking, wow, now everything's fixed. Mm-hmm. I'm in love with my child again. I love mm-hmm. motherhood. Like, that's not necessarily how you're going to feel, but you did the thing and that feels good. And it helped build a little, you know, ladder rung back to where you want to get to. Mm-hmm. But I think sometimes we conflate like the thriving in motherhood and like the connection. Like, we expect that we can make ourselves feel things we can't. And I just think it's really important that to point out that we can. And if you do, like I talked about a little bit in the first half, if you're going through struggles that are taking a lot out of you for an extended length of time, you might also feel great, if better, relieved, if you call in some backup.
Outsource.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Whether that's a close relative or your spouse or partner or another family because probably, isn't it something, it's like how cleaning someone else's house sometimes is more fun than cleaning your own. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's easier to connect with other people's kids than your own kids.
Yeah, you know? Especially if you know that you're doing a good deed or serving a purpose.
Right.
How many Enneagram 2s out there want to be like called into action and help and feel really valued? I was thinking earlier, I think last week, we talked about getting a preschool teacher involved. The preschool age especially is so hard because the kids are old enough to kind of understand stuff, but not old enough to really understand it. So remember that teachers and other adults in your kids' lives want to be there for your whole family and are ready and willing to step in. And you don't have to share everything that's going on. It can be as simple as, you know, our family's going through kind of a stressful time right now. If you notice something like the lunches aren't packed right, or we're missing the red t-shirt day, just know we're doing our best. And that teacher, I mean, 90 out of 100 teachers are going to say no more. We're on it. I'm a mom
We're
too.
On it. We'll help out.
I get it. We'll help out. And you don't have to feel like you have to bare your soul every time. I think sometimes there's a misconception about asking for help or being vulnerable, like catchphrase vulnerable. You don't have to go deep with every person that you let into this stressful time. It can be as simple as, hey, I might get in a jam with all of this driving around and our family's going through a stressful time. Would it be okay if I called you for rides sometimes for my kid? And then what you've done is you've opened that door just a little bit so that when you are having a total panic day and you need the help, you've opened that door to be like, oh, do you mind, you know, bringing Violet home from soccer practice? And it's NBD, no big deal. Like you don't have to tell them like your innermost feelings, I guess, when you ask, when you tap into the community.
Yes. Yeah. Right. But you can still lean on them. And Sarah, I'm so glad you brought up bringing in teachers because I forgot all about mentioning that with Stephanie, who was asking earlier in the show about having a kid who is struggling. It doesn't matter if the struggle is academic. If your child is not sleeping well at night or having problems with their friends or whatever the problem is, you or your child, I would absolutely advocate for bringing a teacher in on that. Like giving them a little peek because honestly, they're probably noticing something off in class anyway. Like if you have a long-term struggle that's affecting them or if they're struggling, like, or even if a sibling is struggling, it often affects kids in ways that their teachers pick up on. But if it's not super serious, they're not going to bug you with it. They're probably not going to come to you and mention it because they've got multiple kids and they don't want to intrude. But every single time I've ever reached out to a teacher and said, just so you know, XYZ kid hasn't been sleeping well at night, or they seem really stressed about their homework and they're crying a lot, or they have a friend in school who's being really mean to them on the playground. It's not even in your class. Like this isn't even happening in your classroom. But it's just a thing. They've always been really grateful to know. And then they've taken action like right away because they can and they want to. And that helps too. Like it's like getting the village involved does sometimes require you to reach out a little bit. But I've never experienced anything besides gratitude when I've done that.
Yeah. Yep. So I agree. And Shannon, we're pulling for you. You are not alone. So I hope you feel like you got a little bit out of this conversation, but also that you have the resources you need to lower your expectations and tap into your community and go easy on yourself. Because 5-3-1, I have had a 5-3-1-year-old and that is not easy. So, all right. Well, we are to our final question. And this listener asked to remain anonymous in part because I believe her child is sometimes around when she listens. And I love that. I think sometimes we do want to protect our kids from the advice we're getting and like the fact that we're talking about them. And I think it's really important that we talk about these things. But I appreciated that she didn't want her kid to know we were talking about that child. So I'm going to read this email from Anonymous. Okay. She says, your recent episodes on organizing, which this is now, by the way, back, I think, at the beginning of 2021, early January. Those episodes touched on something I haven't been able to find many resources to help me with, and that's how to share an environment with a highly creative child. My child, I think is 8 or 9, is a hive of imagination and intellectual activity who uses a wide range of materials on a daily basis. Paints and crayons, but also whatever he has dragged out of the recycling, repurposed objects stolen from our closets, quote, specimens found outside and arranged for observations and various solutions. This is like a chemist. He doesn't play with toys hardly at all. And if there's a game he likes, he remakes it. I love this so much. This is like an inventor. This is like the next, you know, Einstein. And then she says, honestly, it's an organizational nightmare. I see a lot of advice online as to how to nurture your child's creativity, but very little on how to draw parameters around that creativity, especially since we're at home so much these days. It's quite overwhelming. As my husband said, it feels like we're living inside our kid's brain. Perhaps I just need to suck it up and celebrate his gifts, but I'd love any suggestions and sympathy. Okay, I could not love this question more. Because this is a lot of my life with Violet. And I mean, this listener clearly wants to celebrate creativity and inventiveness, but I'm such an advocate for moms also drawing boundaries around their home space and creating house rules or like expectations so that your house doesn't turn into a chemistry lab. Like, you deserve that, anonymous.
Right.
You deserve that. So I don't know, Megan, if you want to jump in first, because we know I'll have lots to say, but does anything come to mind? You have talked about organizing Clara's art supplies before, and we can point to that episode, but something, this feels like somehow more conceptual to me, like a bigger question.
Well, I think that, you know, I've never been someone who's been, I don't have a super organizational brain anyway to offer tactics, but I think this is very much Clara, and she often just had little pieces of paper and little bits of things, half finished projects, like scattered everywhere. Part of my strategy was to offer one space where that could be, and then to kind of like put it in a place that didn't infringe on my life too much, which is why she's, of all of my kids, been the only one who's always had like their own dedicated creation space, because otherwise it would just spill over everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But I think where it would have driven me crazy is if it was starting to be in all rooms of my house. Like that, that would
have become, sounds like it is.
Yes. Yeah. That would have become more than I could have handled. So my solution was to have one space, or sometimes two spaces, sometimes a space, like when she was really little, a space that was like out in the main, like the main area of the house where I could kind of keep an eye on her, but she was out of my way. And then an area like in her bedroom. But a lot of it is just like turning a blind eye to the mess and trying to not be irritated that there's little bits of paint on everything. And I mean, I totally get that it's hard for your home to be completely taken over by what's the contents of someone else's brain,
yeah.
You know? I totally get that. And I think for me, the solution was just to put some parameters around it.
Yeah.
And I know you've gone through the same thing.
Yeah. And I can give some examples of what those parameters look like, because Violet also isn't just like a messy art space kid. She does things like take all the cardboard boxes in her house and build a partition wall in her bedroom. I don't think that was still there when you visited, Megan.
No,
but for
so.
Like months, she built an entire wall out of cardboard and erected it in her room like a partition and cut holes in it that she could pass stuffed animals through. Like, we're talking large in space. And also, as this listener, you know, alluded to, things like gross stuff, like things from outside, potions,
yeah.
Potion making, remaking a game. I laughed so hard at that. Like, why play this game when we could like rearrange all the pieces to all of our games and invent a new game? So I just really empathize with this. And I don't think I think you're totally within your bounds to set boundaries of what you're okay with. The easiest shortcut for me has been to be relatively permissive when the child is in creation mode. Like, sure, you can get out all of the cardboard boxes. Sure, you can take all of the cushions off, you know, and make a fort. And I tend to be permissive at that level, not because I'm a better person, but because it allows me to get a lot of my own stuff done, because that's
right.
Usually when I can
you
work.
Recognize the upsides, right?
Right. So go ahead and wreck my entire room for a couple of hours, and then having really clear expectations about when and how we reset our home. And unfortunately, that you have to be really consistent. They're never going to like it. They're always going to swear that this fort is their new home and they're going to play in it every day. So we can't possibly take it down because I've done all this work of bringing the stuffed animals in there and I rigged up an electric light system. And so like they will try to convince you up and down that they're going to play in this new space or with this new game every day. But you know what? They're not. You know why? Because this is a creative child who gets most value out of the creative process.
And if then they're done. They don't want to execute.
And then they're done. They want to create the next thing. So I have to draw really hard boundaries about resetting our space before the next thing takes over. And that is not fun and it's not easy because the kid will swear up and down that they're not done with this other project. I'm still working on the guinea pig maze. I mean, I could tell you so many funny stories about the things that sometimes Reed gets involved, but it's usually just Violet, like building a guinea pig habitat out of cardboard that included like an elevator. And, you know, these things take over. And then I have to be the one to say, like, I noticed you haven't played with this setup or this game or this project in, you know, fill in the blank. Your tolerance might be a day. It might be a week. You might let them kind of ride it out, depending on where it is in your house. And you just have to be like, you know, it's time to put this away unless you're actively using it. And so that's the boundary I've been able to draw, is being looking the other way, turning a blind eye to most of the creative process, but being a little bit stricter about the reset expectations and then helping them. Sometimes I might have to help. It's overwhelming for an 8-year-old to undo the cat, like the amazing mess they've created. And it's unrealistic of me to be like, well, you did it, you clean it up. I've tried that approach. It's too much for a younger child. So if I'm going to turn a blind eye and allow that level of creativity, I've realized I have to at least be a partner in the cleaning up. And we talked, was it last week, about kids cleaning their rooms and imparting the skills around putting things away, you know, like recycling all those boxes. So I have found it's more helpful for me to be a partner when it's time to clean up. And I just have to be okay with that because it's too much. They're really good at making the messes and they don't have the skills yet to totally put them away. So I'm not sure if that totally answered the question, but I think it's finding out where you can be allowing and where you need your boundaries for sanity. And yours might look different from mine.
One thing that comes to mind when you're talking about this, Sarah, and it's funny because my two bookend kids, Jacob and Clara, are very similar in this way. And one of the ways that I can be personally triggered by this tendency, this personality trait, is that it can be very wasteful.
Yes.
So,
oh my gosh,
these are the kind of kids who don't, they're not happy having one notebook that they write things in. They want 17 notebooks and then they use one page. Or like they want fresh new construction paper every time they want to make something.
And yes.
When they were little, I do remember sometimes being like, you can make whatever you want with what you have, but I'm not going to go out and buy new supplies when you're not even using the thing that, like that cardboard box that you turn into whatever, you could just as easily repurpose that cardboard box. And sometimes that helped keep it under control because I'd be like, sorry. And I would just play dumb or like, you know, play helpless. Like, I can't get my hands on another one. You're going to have to figure out how to make that work. And then they would have to make the decision about which of their stuff they were going to repurpose, kind of put it back in their hands. But it can, like, I know you and I both have a thing about waste. And man, watching things get used once.
Like a roll of tape. Oh my God.
Yes.
It gives me heart palpitations thinking about the Scotch tape.
And then just being held hostage. So you've got something that needs like maybe an expensive, like those little foam sheets or something like that. And they're all going into this one thing that hasn't been touched in weeks. And I would put my foot down sometimes about that and just say, I can't just have, you know, perfectly good supplies.
Yes.
Just being kind, just languishing in this project that you haven't looked at in weeks. So I think that's another way that I think you're perfectly within your, you know, rights as a mom to just say, I love how creative you are. This is so great. I'm so excited that you're building this stuff. But can we take that apart and use those components for something else? Because I don't want to buy anymore. The other thing I will say is I don't know that these tendencies are ever truly outgrown. Yeah. And Jacob is 23 now. And in my house, every now and then I will look in the freezer and there will be a potion. He still makes potions.
Oh my gosh.
And it's usually like he'll be eating ice cream or something and it melts a little bit. And I think it sparks his brain to go, what would happen if I mixed something else in it and then put it in the freezer? Or like he freezes weird food. Like it's just weird stuff. And I'll be in the freezer. I'm like, who like had a half frozen, like a half melted bowl of ice cream and froze it? And all the other kids go, who do you think? Like they all know it's him. Because he's just earned the reputation of being the one who does odd things like that. Mm-hmm. And Clara, when she talks about Jacob, will say he's the smartest person I ever knew. So the two of them are like peas in the pod.
Yeah.
Bookends
yeah.
at either side. And I just try to like make space for that while recognizing that there's something about that wanton creativity that I don't truly get. But that doesn't mean I can just let it take over my life or that I have to buy constant new rolls of tape.
No. And I think the way you set your boundaries, we just did that episode on house rules and we're going to revisit that theme. But like the house rules you make up are yours. They're arbitrary. I'm thinking like you could say something like there's zero creative construction that happens in this room of the house. This is mom's space. So you can do it anywhere else. So you could set a room boundary. You could set a time boundary. Like we don't build, we don't start new projects after 4 p.m. Like, I mean, these are arbitrary, but that's the point. Like, I think there's a lot of room for you to create and hold and stick to boundaries that work for your space and your personality without squashing a young child's creativity. It may, I mean, kids often do really well with some containers, some literal and figurative containers. So it may even be helpful for the child to have some expectations and boundaries to stick within. Because clearly there's no lack of creativity in this child. And the containers can sometimes focus that creativity.
Right. Yep. Yeah. Totally agree.
All right. Well, it is time to wrap up. And speaking of that House Rules series, if you're not familiar, we just started it last month and we're going to do another one next week. But this is where we crowdsource our community for their best house rules. And a lot of them are arbitrary and sometimes even silly house rules around a given challenge. So we have another House Rules installment coming up next Tuesday. If you missed the one on sibling harmony, it was House Rules for Encouraging Sibling Harmony. We'll link that up in the show notes. And we'll be back in a week. Megan, this was fun.
This was really fun. Talk to everyone soon.